Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers on one of my favorite days of the week, sitting here talking to you and hopefully listening to your call back, and with my very favorite friend, Richard Presser.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
It is a good evening. And for those of you who get our email, you will know that tonight our guest is Pythagoras, who is the master of numerology, the master of numbers. And if you're not familiar with how we work, Richard will be taking a message from him and tune into his energies by imagining the heart, going into the heart chakra and visualizing the third eye. And as Richard describes his energies, perhaps you will feel them also. Our whole life and everything around us is energy, and this is how we connect to people and events, different consciousness even. So, Richard, what are you ascertaining at the moment with regards to Pythagoras?
Well, he has a very heart-centered energy, very strong energy, very clear, very direct, you might say. It's almost like his energy, it's almost like a knife, really almost cuts through. It's not hard to imagine that he was in life a man of precision, you might say, of directedness and of great intellect. So although there is this heart-directed nature, there is also this focus, you might call it, very strong focus in his energy. Very, very interesting. Very strongly focused on the heart.
That's beautiful. And I assume that he has a message for us, Richard.
Well, I hope so. It's what he told you the other day, so I hope he's as good as his word.
We hope he still has a message ready, huh?
Yeah. Let's see what he's got to say. I welcome the opportunity to come forth on this radio show in this manner. For those of you who have good memories, I came forth on the radio show some time ago for different reasons, you might say. And as some of you understand, I was a great master of, as Carolyn said, of numerology, of mathematics, but also of sacred geometry. And really those things are very closely connected. In truth, it really was sacred geometry and its expression in terms of how things operate in the world and how this geometry underpins all that occurs. That was the fundamental nature of the work that I undertook in my lifetime. And there is but a smidgen of that work that remains in your public knowledge with the simple relationship in a right angle triangle that still bears my name. But that is such a minor part of what my life was about. The community that I set up and ran in many ways would be not unlike an Indian ashram, in the sense that people lived a particular way in that community. Diet was closely focused upon. And in the West, it is more likely that such a grouping these days would be considered a cult, because in many ways it was. It was very focused on what it was doing. It was very much built around the teachings and traditions and practices that I propagated, you might say, encouraged. And so the heart of this was really understanding, as I said, sacred geometry. And it is this element that I wish to come forth and speak to you about to an extent this evening. Those of you who follow some of the less mainstream science will be aware that there are those who have done a great deal of work to, you might say, untangle how sacred geometry underpins life. The work of Nassim Haramein, for example, in your current time, is a good illustration of this work, though he is not alone in beginning to pick this apart. There are others who have studied the basic numerology that underpins all life. And this too is an important aspect, and in a sense they go hand in hand. But what I wished to enter into in particular this evening bears upon the time in which you live, and that is the way the various dimensions interconnect, because there are differences, you might say, in a geometric sense between one dimension and the next. Yes, there, in a sense, is a similarity in the underlying geometric structuring, but they differ, and in particular, the issue arises as to how one dimension interfaces to the next, because they do interface. And again, this is a geometric interface. And some of you are aware that there is a shape called the Merkaba, which in essence is two pyramidal shapes which intersect, and in acting they rotate in opposite directions. And my sense is that few perhaps understand why it is that this Merkaba is used for moving from one dimension to another. And it is not only in the process of ascension that this is done. Indeed, the Merkaba is widely used as a vehicle for balancing and for transformation of energy. And the reason that the Merkaba is used to transfer from one dimension to the next is that it acts as a translation device, you might say, from the geometric context of one dimension to the next. So it is a mechanism, if you will, by which to move from one dimension to another. And it is not just between the low dimension that you are in to the next dimension to which you will move, but indeed such a mechanism is used to move from between all dimensions, because it is a transformer, a geometric transformer, you might say, that takes into account the differences between one dimension and the next. I do not wish to try and explain the geometric differences between one dimension and the next, because I do not feel that is easily done and would be useful. All I wish to enter into here is to have you understand that sacred geometry underpins the way, you might say, matter, as you experience it, comes forth from the background energy field, the way it is expressed. And that there is this need to take into account the differences between one dimension and the next in terms of how this occurs or how it is expressed, and hence this role of this geometric transformer, you might say. Now, the key thing about this is that for the purposes of the ascension event that is in your near future, it is not something that individuals need to be aware of in general, but rather to accept that they will participate in the process, because the Merkaba will be activated automatically for them. Everybody, in fact, carries within their physical structures multiple expressions of the Merkaba, particularly when you examine the energy flows that relate to every individual, the way that energies connect back to the center of the cosmos and also through to the center of the Earth. So there is a Merkaba which centers on the heart center, which travels with every individual, but there are larger scale Merkabas that are also involved with every individual. And it is this Merkaba that is centered on the heart center, which acts as what you might call the transformer, the mechanism to move from one dimension to the next, taking the physical body with you. So this is the essence of what I wanted to say. The cherubim, though they for the most part consciously will not understand this, actually will play a role in activating the Merkaba for all of those who will participate in this process. So in part it is for this reason that I come forth to mention it to you, because in moving it into your conscious awareness, it opens a door, you might say, for you to more consciously become aware of your own Merkaba, to remind you, in fact, that some of you will have participated in work with the Merkaba with me in earlier conference calls with Carol, and also working with the different expressions of the electron to, in a sense, practice the ability to transform matter, you might say, to bring forth matter from the background energy field. All of these things will become more important once more as these events unfold. None of that was by accident or, you might say, by chance. It was all planned and intended. And those of you who participated in that earlier work and practiced it will reawaken that knowledge as you move forward. So I mention these things to you simply to, you might say, open some doors for some of you to whom this is more relevant, and also for the general listening audience to begin to understand a little of these processes. And I encourage you to look more closely at the entire area of sacred geometry and how it underpins how matter is expressed in all creation. And so it is.
Thank you so much, and I find your message very exciting. And I would like to ask you a question before we get to questions from other people. If an individual wishes to bring a healthier body into their expression and to bring forth positive events, what is your suggestion as to how they could go about this?
It is interesting that you should raise this, because there are techniques that are taught in the world which are varyingly successful for individuals, and there are many reasons for this, that involve intention and visualization and so on. And you might imagine that off the basis of our conversation this evening, I would add one thing to that process, and that is to, as you speak your intention and as you visualize, you also visualize your Merkaba spinning, because in doing so, you are activating the creative processes. And this indeed will enhance the effectiveness greatly of your intention setting. So this might be about bringing something forth in your experience, or it might be about improving your health. It applies in all of these situations, that activating your Merkaba when you do these things will indeed greatly strengthen the impact of your intention and visualization.
Thank you. In activating the Merkaba, it's my understanding that one half spins in one direction and the other half spins in the opposite direction. Is it necessary for us to pay attention to this while we're bringing in our desires?
All you need to do is intend that the Merkaba spin as is intended. And if you can visualize the two pyramids rotating in opposite directions, they do not have to spin rapidly, they just need to rotate. And indeed, it is unimportant which way they rotate, other than that they rotate in opposite directions. This is all that is important. So just intend that this be so, and you will activate this contribution to the process.
Well, this is very valuable information, and I want to thank you. I also want to mention to our listening audience that the time here on the show goes by so quickly. And if you have a question, now is the time to check in and get in line to ask your question of this incredibly knowledgeable guest. Thank you. Sally from Virginia is on line one. Sally, welcome.
Hello, Carolyn, Richard, Pythagoras. How large is the Merkaba at our heart center and the others?
How large?
Yeah.
And so what is behind this question, wanting to know how large? Is there other aspects of that question?
How to visualize this? Is it something like the little one I have a sample of?
I see why you're asking that. Okay. Richard, did you understand the question?
Yes. The key thing to focus on is the Merkaba, which is centered on your heart center. And it is helpful to consider that the Merkaba, when you begin to work with it, is perhaps contained within your chest. And then as you work with it, visualize it growing until it surrounds your entire body. This helps you to connect with it and to activate it and empower it. And so the size you should be intending for it to be is to be a size which encompasses your entire physical form, which would mean that the Merkaba is a little larger than your physical body.
Ah, thank you. That's exactly what I was wondering. Big help. Thank you.
Well, you got your answer, Sally. And thank you, Richard and Pythagoras. Beautiful information coming forth. I just love the thought of it. Now, we don't have a questioner on the line at the moment, so I'm going to ask a question. We don't really have people to teach us this kind of work. It's something that we have to do on our own, which sometimes is very hard to follow a process and the discipline necessary. So I ask Pythagoras for someone who wishes to bring this into their own knowledge. Where would you start? Just how would you begin to understand this process so you can learn all you can from its experience?
Do you mean the totality of sacred geometry, Carolyn, or specifically using intention? What did you mean?
Well, for our own individual use, where we are trying to, let's give an example, obtain a healthier body.
I suggest you simply use the guidance that I gave you earlier. It is enough. Visualize okay. the macabre and intend that it surround your entire body. Sit with that macabre, feel it spinning in your chest. And if you, with the kind of skills that you have, Carolyn, but many others also, you are likely to be able to visualize the macabre. It is not something which is imaginary. It is not something which you can see with your normal eyes, but certainly with your inner sight, you can witness the macabre. And so once you have brought it into your awareness, see it grow. And if you can't see it, that is not a problem. Just intend that you connect with it, that you visualize it in your mind's eye as filling your chest. Intend that it rotate and intend that it then expand in size to encompass your entire body. That is all you need to do. There is nothing more you need.
Thank you. Since we're talking about this, I would like to do a little experiment with the audience. And perhaps take a moment, close your eyes. Feel very connected to this. And imagine that Merkaba in your heart center, in the heart center, right, Richard?
Yes.
Imagine the Merkaba in the heart center. And the next step would be to intend that it is spinning. Would that be the next step?
Yes.
Now, is there another step to this?
Intend that it expand to encompass your entire body.
Good. So then intend that it expands so it covers the entire body. And would this be the time when we would bring forth our intended desires, maybe to be healthier, to maybe even find a job? Would it work for that?
Sure.
So you want to find a job that is more satisfying than the one you have. So whatever your desire might be, bring that in. And I would imagine that the more that you can visualize that goal, the better off the result would be. So we take this moment for each and every one of you to work with this yourself. I think information like this is quite remarkable, but unless we start practicing it and working with it, it's not as helpful as it could be. And that's what I'm trying to help our listeners with, so that you do this little exercise and be in a position where something comes to mind that you want to bring into your experience, that you know how to do it. So, if someone wishes to call in and explain their experience, if you could visualize that and what the process felt like, please do so. It would be helpful to other people. I don't have another question myself for Pythagoras, and we're not getting calls in at the moment from our listeners for him. So it's rather difficult right now to follow this string of information.
Well, I sense he may have further information in the absence of other questions. Let me see. It is relevant to understand that when I was living, there was not a great deal of appreciation of the importance of these processes. There were levels within ancient societies, you might say, where the knowledge of the expression of sacred geometry came forth, where this was understood. And there are those who've recognized that indeed the flower of life, as you call it, has been expressed in the carvings and so on of many of the ancient civilizations. And indeed, it comes forth in some more modern contexts because this knowledge has remained within your world in something of an underground expression in more recent times, really flowing through from my original teachings. There have been a number of groups who have kept that knowledge alive. For example, the Essenes in Yeshua's time studied my work, and scrolls were readily available in that time which recorded this information. And so that information flowed through into the Gnostic stream and also, in a sense, comes forth in other esoteric streams, such as the alchemists. The alchemists understood the importance of sacred geometry. So it is not that this information has really been lost in your world, but truly has been intentionally buried, you might say, from the conscious awareness of most of humanity. And my key purpose in coming forth in the time that I did was to reinvigorate this knowledge within the consciousness of humanity and refresh it within the grid system. And there are those who have kept, as I say, this knowledge alive, albeit in an underground sense, since that time. And it is no accident that the one that I referred to earlier, Nassim Haramein, is bringing this understanding forth so powerfully now, is because this man has in past lives powerful connections to these understandings of how life actually works, how creation actually works. It is no accident that he has stepped forth from outside of mainstream physics, you might say, because he chose not to get entangled with the traditional theories of things, but rather rely upon his inner guidance to awaken this knowledge. And for those of you who have studied how he has developed his work, it is very much along these lines. In more recent times, he has worked with quite a number of other people. But in his early time, he relied very much on certainly studying the available information, but in terms of understanding and development of his own perspective and theories, he relied on his inner guidance. And so he, in his own way, is, in a way, in your time, undertaking a reactivation, you might say, of the same work that I was doing. There is a great deal of overlap, although clearly from an implementation perspective, it looks very different. So it is useful for you to understand this, and this understanding of how this unfolds is becoming more widely understood. There is also a connection with this understanding in the work that comes forth from Meron Kesh, though it is not so obvious to many that the way he speaks of bringing things forth from the background energy field and the use of sacred geometry are necessarily interconnected. But in truth, it is that underpinning geometry that is the secret to the essence of what this man is bringing forth. So these understandings are useful to have. And all of this is coming forth and arising in this special time of what I would consider transition from the dark, difficult consciousness that humanity has been in for a long time, for many thousands of years, in truth. And as the pieces are put in place for this transition, this transformation to a new consciousness. So you may find that additional background to be of assistance.
That's very exciting information. Thank you. Barbara from Florida is on line one. Welcome, Barbara. What is your question?
Thank you. I'm honored that you would take my call. I have seen these swirling golden interlaced triangles before, and I understand the heart center and the Merkava there. What is the connection between the Merkava of the heart center and the pineal gland? Do we have one there as well, or is it just an energetic link?
That's an interesting question. Richard, did you hear that?
Yes. The pineal gland, as you know, serves important purposes when a human being is growing. And that is an important aspect of its role. Of course, you understand that it also plays a role in connecting with other forms of consciousness, you might say, to be able to visualize, in a sense, things in other dimensional expressions. It is the heart of what is known as the third eye, is in fact the pineal gland. And so it carries an important role for, in a sense of being able to visualize or to connect with other dimensions and to see into other dimensions. That is a different purpose from what we have been discussing, where we are talking about moving the physical form from one dimension to another. These, in a sense, are connected, but they are very different. Connected in the sense that they both relate to acknowledge, firstly, both require the acknowledgement of the existence of other dimensions of life, you might say. But one is connecting in and communicating with other forms of consciousness in other dimensions, the unseen, those beings that may have crossed over, and so on. But that is the role of the pineal gland, and in a sense, it allows you to travel anywhere in the cosmos and visualize anything, or even beyond this cosmos. There is no limit in that sense to what you are able to see. But that does not mean that your physical body is traveling there. An aspect of your consciousness effectively travels there, but your physical body remains very anchored in this dimension. So this is the difference.
Thank you for your question, Barbara. Yeah, very interesting answer. Thank you both. I just would like to say to our audience one more time, we're moving on towards the end of the show, and if any of this information has brought up a question, please call in with it so we can address it before we finish this evening. I would like to bring in the subject of numerology. You might say the science of numbers. Where does the science of numbers or numerology fit into this discussion that we are having with the Merkaba and so forth?
There are key numbers that arise from sacred geometry, you might say. And the most common number, you could perhaps say, is the number 64, which is a powerful number in numerology. You also see it expressed through the I Ching, the traditional Chinese oracle, you might say. And there is, you might say, a fundamental connection between numerology as it relates to the expression of life and the way life comes forth in this sacred geometrical way. If you examine the nature of the fundamentals of creation, you might say, you begin with the straight line and the circle, being the masculine and the feminine. You might consider those two to be one and zero in a way. And then the next shape to make is the triangle, which brings forth a number three. So you can see that, in a sense, the fundamental numbers have a connection in with sacred geometry at a very fundamental level. And of course, there are many other relationships that flow from key numbers as you start to understand the geometry of life, the relationships, for example, within the periodic table, the way various elements come forth. These things, again, can be understood from a sacred geometric and a numerological perspective. There are relationships here which reflect those underlying relationships, and some people have begun to understand this.
Thank you so much for your complete answer, and it was a complete answer. And I would like, we do not have more questions coming in from the audience, so at this moment, I would like to thank Pythagoras, and I would like to thank Richard for all of this beautiful information that has been brought forth this evening. Thank you both. So, Richard, do you wish to comment in any way upon the information that was given to us?
I think it's very interesting information. I mean, I think there are, Pythagoras was saying, there is a greater recognition now of the role of sacred geometry in bringing forth life and bringing forth matter, you might say, from the background energy field. I think that understanding has been growing, and I think the work, as you said, that Nassim Haramein has brought forth has been very important in all of that. But I think it was very interesting to understand this link, the role, if you will, of the macabre in that its purpose is really as a, you might say, a transformer as you move between dimensions. I find that very interesting. It's certainly not something that I'd considered or looked at. So it's interesting information.
There, I just thought of a question that I think is an important question, and maybe Pythagoras is nearby that he can answer this. And that is, as our understanding is, there is a Merkaba in the center of the earth. Perhaps he can give us a little information to its purpose.
There is indeed a crystalline Merkaba in the center of the earth, and quite a number of those with spiritual skills have been able to witness this Merkaba. You have, from what I've described, begun to understand that the Merkaba, in a sense, is a transformer of sorts. And its role in the center of the earth is to, you might say, act not so much as a dimensional translator in the way I described the personal Merkaba, but rather it plays a role in energy transformation between your dimension and the higher dimensions. There are energies that are being sent continuously from the center of the cosmos to your beautiful planet Earth. And in a sense, it is this energy which keeps the planet alive, in a sense, and able to continue with its work. And so this is not just a one-way flow, but in fact a two-way flow. And you are also aware that the ley lines and the places where they cross on the planet also act as places where energies flow in and out of the planet itself. And these energies flow down to the Merkaba in the center of the planet, and in this manner are transformed, you might say, to support the functioning and sustaining of the balance of the planet. The makeup of the planet is not some accident. The makeup of the planet is very carefully planned. All of the mixture of elements and compounds of metals and so on that are present on the planet are really a reflection of a fundamental balance in energy, and indeed a balance within the geometric expressions of the planet itself. This begins to get a little complex, but the Merkaba in the center of the planet is sustaining that connection between the planet itself and the center of the Earth, and in a sense sustaining the energy flow within the planet to keep it in its living, you might say, dynamic state.
Thank you. I would like, your answer reminded me of something else, and that is the formation of gold in our planet. Are you in a position to give us any thoughts as to why there is gold here in our planet?
I touched on elements of the periodic table a little earlier. Some have understood the underlying, you might say, expression of sacred geometry that comes forth in the various elements that make up the periodic table and the patterning that exists, the electron, proton, neutron balances that are expressed throughout that periodic table. And within that balancing, there is also a natural balance, you might say, between all of the various elements in terms of the quantities in a physical sense, which are expressed throughout a body like planet Earth. This is not unique to planet Earth. What we are discussing here is a balancing of the way in which, you might say, energy is manifested in a total body such as your planet Earth. So there is a spread of the various elements that are expressed in a body like this. And the inevitable outcome of that is that there is gold present upon the planet, just as there is carbon and there is iron and copper and so on. And all of these elements, in a sense, are all expressed. Now, gold itself is an interesting subject in many ways. Firstly, gold does have some special properties. As you know, it tends not to form compounds readily at normal temperatures. And so gold tends to exist as in its metallic form, and it tends not to tarnish in the air, as you know. And this is one of the reasons it has been given value by humanity. It also carries important balancing energies. As you know, there have been people who, in the time since the fall in Atlantis, used a special form of gold called monatomic gold to, you might say, enhance their spiritual skills. And this knowledge of the power of gold to do this is deeply embedded in the consciousness of humanity, and it is one of the reasons that gold is so highly valued by humanity, and indeed it is why it has been used by what you might consider royalty over very long, long periods of time. Of course, those that occupy roles that are considered royalty are very different beings from the ones who occupied such roles many thousands of years ago. But that is a separate subject. It is an example of where the dark have overtaken important roles within the organizational structures within the planet. But gold has been valued in part because of all of the things that I've spoken about, and also because the energies associated with gold have a calming effect on the human body. They help to balance the body. There is this affinity, you might say, with gold, and it again is one of the reasons that it is highly prized, even though it is not understood well by humanity.
So if we wore jewelry made out of gold, that would work the same way?
Yes, indeed. It is not the same as the monatomic gold, but it certainly assists with the healing tendencies of the body. As you have been previously told, the combination of jewelry made from copper and gold, you might say braided together, is very powerful from a healing perspective. Things like arthritis and so on. Again, these things relate to energies within the body. And so that combination is very powerful. But gold itself, by itself, helps to balance the energy flows within the body, and in so doing, helps to encourage a healthier physical form.
That's really good to know. Since Pythagoras is here, we do have another question. Meadow from New York is on line one. Meadow, welcome, and what is your question?
Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering how the number 64 is connected with the Cabal or Illuminati, like how they might be using it.
It's a good question. Did you hear it, Richard?
Yes. Those of the dark well understand the role of sacred geometry. And in fact, much of their symbolism, you might say, has been stolen from the light. So these tools so very often can be used for dark purposes as well as purposes of the light. And so it is not necessarily that 64 or geometric structures which express it are more powerful in the hands of the dark, but they are powerful in the hands of the dark, and in many ways those dark ones have a better understanding today, perversely, of the power of these tools than most who represent the light. This knowledge has been largely forgotten by most. And those of the dark have been much more vigilant, you might say, in practicing their knowledge of these tools. So, yes, 64 is an important number for them in their work.
Beautiful information. Thank you. Did you try and say something else? Jennifer from San Juan, California is online too. Welcome, Jennifer. What is your question?
I first wanted to thank you for the beautiful job you're doing. It's a wonderful show. Thank you, Pythagoras. Thank you, Carolyn.
Isn't it remarkable?
I just
the information.
Just, Wonderful, wonderful information. I just needed clarification on the name that you've mentioned several times, Nasif Harriman. I'm not familiar with it. Could you... You know what
yes.
I'm talking about? There's a person that you've...
Yes, the Christian name is spelled N-A-S-S-I-M. I think, don't hold me to it. There may only be one S. But I think it's...
Something like that, okay.
N-A-S-S-I-M is his Christian name, and his surname is spelled H-A-R-A-M-E-I-N. If you put that into Google,
that's what I needed. Thank you.
It'll correct any errors I've given you.
Beautiful. Thank you again. I love you. I love you. I love you. Have a wonderful day.
Good to hear
That's
from you.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Say hi to Rocky for me.
Well, Richard, it sounds like this information is well received by our audience, and I would like to thank the two of you, Pythagoras, for coming with this beautiful information, and you, Richard, for taking it.
It's a pleasure. And Roger is on the line from Nashville, I see.
Oh, that just popped up. Okay. Roger? from Nashville, Tennessee, on line one. Welcome.
Richard, thank you. Richard, Carolyn, Pythagoras. You can hear me okay?
Sure.
Yes.
A quick question. The decaying of the telomere, does that affect the pineal gland in any way?
Good question.
That is an interesting question.
Really? Those people are out there thinking.
There is no connection between these two. The pineal gland is impacted by the presence of salts in your diet, such things as calcium in particular, because it does tend to build up around the pineal gland. But many think that that build-up actually shuts the pineal gland down, and I'm here to tell you that it does not. And the pineal gland is more impacted in terms of its ability by the degree to which you use it. It is like a muscle in that sense. It is like a skill that you practice and develop and become more refined with. The more you use it, the more you set out to use it, the more you will activate it. And it is also impacted by the tendency, you might say, that you carry for having used it actively in past lives. These might sound a little bizarre to you in terms of the physical expression in this life, but it is really an ability that you carry from lifetime to lifetime. It is one of the reasons that these skills have, in a way, simply opened up for Carolyn, because she has actively used them throughout most of her lifetimes. And so this is more relevant than the impact of the telomere. And for those who do not understand the role of the telomere, I will mention that, in essence, it is the terminating point on the end of the chromosome. And in the time since fall in Atlantis, this, you might say, terminating point on the chromosome, known as the telomere, gradually shortens with each time there is cell replication, such that there are only so many replications of each particular type of cell before that process stops. And this is what contributes to the physical aging that you currently experience. So that is why the telomere is relevant here. And if you wish to understand this further, you may wish to Google the work of a man known as Hayflick, who undertook the original work on this in the 1950s, as far as your current scientific understandings are concerned. So.
You know, we've come to the time, Richard, when we have to say goodbye, and I say this with great regret. This has been such remarkable information.
Indeed it has.
And I'd like to thank Pythagoras in a special way for joining us, and you, Richard, for bringing it forth.
My pleasure.
We probably have a minute. Do you have anything you wish to bring forth and discuss in that minute or mention?
The only thing that crosses my mind is the wonderful feedback that I've been receiving in the last week or so on the on the Templar videos that have now reached the hands of many that were in the first orders. And the feedback has been very heartwarming, I must say. It's very encouraging. So if you haven't checked out that material, I will put the link in by email regarding the recording of this show so that you can go and check that out. I'll be sending out an email shortly with some of those testimonials, but really it's very exciting, the response that we're seeing to those.
I was hoping you would mention that, and I thank you for that. Well, Richard, we're at the time when we have to say goodbye. As they say, parting is such sweet sorrow.
Well, thank you for your wonderful work, Carolyn. Until next time, my friends. Bye for now.
Yes, until next time. Bye for now.